So I heard, so I heard. Did you really volunteer for that?
Yes, veteran.
Crazy mother, he muttered.
He hesitated for a second before continuing.
Why don't you go to the infirmary and get that arm patched up?
I stopped climbing the stairs and looked at him to see if he was serious. I could tell by his eyes that he was. With a major attack inbound, I'd thought for sure he was going to have me man the walls until I dropped.
Thank you, veteran.
Never thank me for anything, recruit. That isn't good for morale.
Why not?
Because when or if I have to gut you later, we'll both feel bad.
I nodded, but didn't entirely understand his meaning. Now the training was over, when was he going to have to kill me?
I'll be going, I said.
I left and sensed him watching me as I walked away. I didn't bother to look back and check, though. I was tired. I needed to get my arm fixed. Legion Medical was pretty good. We had more fancy gadgets than just the revival units. Often, troops were injured but not killed and needed repairs. That's what they called the process, repairs. You didn't heal the sick in Legion Varus, you repaired a broken soldier. We were like cars or robots. I guess in a way it was an accurate definition. Since they could stamp out new replacement troops, were we really all that different from any other piece of equipment? I shook my head. It was best to leave thoughts like that in storage rather than letting them carom around in your mind and possibly bounce out of your mouth later on. They were damaging, difficult ideas. What officers in Legion Varus called bad thoughts. Outside, it was eerily quiet. People spoke in whispers as if they thought making noise would attract the enemy. Apparently, the lizards had yet to make their attack. They'd pounded out a few holes in the walls and scorched much of the roof, but they hadn't charged in yet. I wondered what they were waiting around for. I crossed the compound to a small, squatty building. I could tell the legionnaires had been busy. They'd domed many of the structures with a quick layer of puffcrete to reinforce them. Medical was inside one of these igloo-like buildings. I went inside and felt a cool blast of air wash over my face as I removed my helmet. A bio met me and ran a critical eye over me.
"You don't look good," he said.
I showed him my shoulder.
"Shrapnel?"
I shook my head.
"Bullets. Snap rifle slivers, to be exact."
He gave me an odd look.
"This isn't blue on blue, is it?"
"No, Specialist. The lizards have them, too." He nodded and made a note on his tapper.
"Good.
Loads more screens to fill out if it's friendly fire.
Let's get you onto a gurney."
I let myself flop onto a floating surface as soon as it was brought near enough. It was really an air sled with a pad on it and a white sheet over that. It wasn't overly comfortable, but right now it felt good. They scooted me into a back room and left. I sighed and peeled my uniform away from my injuries. They didn't look good. At the very least, they were infected. The skin was an angry red all around the puncture wounds. I wondered if the lizards had dirtied up their bullets on purpose, or if it was just the natural microbes of Steel World that were eating my flesh and poisoning my blood. The wait went on for several minutes. I reflected that every medical establishment I'd ever been in seemed to automatically place you in a room and forget about you for a while. At least the air was cool and dry in here. I tried to focus on that and enjoy it, letting my suit open at every vent point to allow my sweat to dry. Finally, another bio entered. Her nose wrinkled in disgust immediately. I guessed I wasn't the freshest-smelling recruit she'd ever met. She didn't say anything to me. Two orderlies came in behind her and stood with arms crossed. They were muscular guys, and their cold stares had me worried. Was this going to hurt more than I thought it was? They had the look of men who were thinking about how to hold me down. The bio looked up again, and for the first time I saw her rank insignia. She was a centurion. I finally recognized her. She was Centurion Thompson, the same woman who I'd met when I came out of the Saurian tunnel. I sat up on my elbows, wincing in pain as I did so.
"Sir?"
I called out to her.
"What is it, recruit?" Did you get the revival data out of that unit? I asked. The one I hauled out of the tunnels?
She gave me a sidelong glance.
It's best you don't ask about that.
Why not?
Why not Centurion Thompson?
She corrected.
Sorry, sir, why not Centurion Thompson?
She sucked in a breath and let it out.
You're forcing my hand. Don't they teach recruits how to keep to their own tech?
I stared at her, unsure how to answer that one. Thompson waved forward the two orderlies. I didn't like the look in their eyes. Hard hands gripped my arms, one man on each arm. I thought about kicking them, but I'd been surprised.
What the hell do you think you're doing? I demanded.
They had restraints out now. I hadn't seen them before. I guess these guys were good at hiding them. Alarmed, I struggled. I managed to get a knee into one man's gut, but he didn't let go. They were strong, and I was injured. I saw the bio readying a needle.
"This is bullshit, Centurion," I shouted. "My commander will hear about this."
"No, he won't,"
she said in the sweet voice her kind used on screaming children who didn't want their shots.
"Now listen, James. It's best for everyone if you calm down. There's no need to make this unpleasant."
My hands were lashed together and my ankles, too. I was tied to the same air sled gurney I'd been enjoying a minute before. I looked across the room to the regrowth equipment. They had a flesh printer right there. All she had to do was pull the metal out of me, shoot in some antibiotics, and run the printer over my wounds. They would spray out fresh cells and the wound would seal over almost immediately. What was the delay?
"Do you really think all this is necessary, to pull a few slivers out of my shoulder?" I asked her.
"All your injuries will be taken care of," she said. "Don't worry."
I had no idea what she was up to, but she waved away the orderlies. She held her syringe up, and a single droplet of amber liquid ran down the needle. The orderlies left, and Thompson and I were alone. I glared at her while she gave me a reassuring smile in return.
"I'm going to ask you some questions before I inject you with this," she said in a very professional-sounding voice.
"What is it?"
"Nothing important."
I eyed the needle, then her face. Her eyes were fixed upon mine. She was still smiling.
"Ask," I said. "Have you ever been revived illegally?"
I hesitated and immediately cursed myself for that. So that's what this was about. I should have suspected I couldn't stay below the radar forever. Even if the Galactics were in the dark about it, not everyone else would be.
"I don't know what you're talking about," I said, trying to be as convincing as possible.
"I've been killed multiple times, if that's what you're asking, in combat and in training."
"Negative," she said, examining her temper. "You never died in training. You were killed in combat twice, and you were revived twice. There is another entry, however. Treatment for toxemia. The toxins found were quite unusual. That sort of treatment isn't given without us knowing about it, James. Healthy people only get these blood gas numbers from being revived with bad materials. If it had happened on the battlefield, they would have done a regrow immediately."
"Are you going to do your job and fix my arm, or what?"
She smiled calmly.
"Yes, of course. But not in the manner you're expecting. In answer to your other earlier question, yes, we did get the data from the components you salvaged, and yes, most of the people stored there were revived."
I was glad to hear the people I'd meant to save had survived. Graves, Natasha, Keevy, all of them. But right now I had other concerns. I had no idea what this crazy Centurion was up to, but it didn't look good. Clearly the bios knew something was up, and they wanted to know what it was. I couldn't tell them I'd been executed and illegally revived. That wasn't going to help anyone. Specialist Grant and I would both be in trouble then. I couldn't do that to her after she'd taken big chances to save me.
"Centurion," I said,
"you seem quite upset about something. I hope it's nothing I've done." Thompson laughed.
"I'm not upset at all, James."
So that's why you're going to murder me?
This isn't murder, recruit. Think about it as the correction of an unfortunate error. You're not supposed to be dismantling our revival units. You're also operating on a bad grow, another error. Lastly, you aren't being truthful with me. I'm going to correct all these problems by recycling you now. This injection will solve further problems. Mentally, you'll be taken back in time. You won't remember anything about our equipment. Really, you should be thanking me. You'll be back on Corvus in no time.
I was breathing hard. Part of me could see what she was saying, but I didn't want to die. Every instinct in my body fought against it. "Don't you people take an oath to protect life and heal the sick?" I asked. "What kind of a loser were you in school?" I'd been trying to provoke a response with this attack, and I got a bigger one than I'd expected. She stepped quickly to my side and put that needle in my face. Her eyes flared with anger. I realized I'd overdone it. Her calm, caring facade had vaporized.
"You know what this is?" she demanded. "When I stick you with this, you'll be dead in 30 seconds. Now, if you tell me how you got to keep a bad grow, how you got revived without proper authorization or records, I'll let them revive you on Corvus. But not if you piss me off too much. If that happens, this can be a one-way trip."
That was as far as I let her get with her little speech. I'd been sawing away at the straps that held my left wrist, using the same knife I always carried. I'd last used it to cut away locked seat belts on the lifter my first day after joining Legion Varus, and here I was doing it again. I reached up with my left arm, my good arm, and grabbed the syringe she had in my face. I twisted her wrist and pressed the needle against the skin of her neck.
"Freeze," I said, "or I'll kill you right now."
The needle was automatic, as they all were these days. The second it sensed it was inside human flesh, it would pump the contents into the recipient's bloodstream under power. I could see the sac at the end was already trembling, ready to compress itself. The look on her face was indescribable. I grinned at her.
"Yeah," I said. "I'm full of surprises." "How did you—"
"My dad bought a knife for me on my 18th birthday, and it's still as sharp as the day I unwrapped the package. It's a quality blade, but I never knew when I got it that it would be this useful."
"Recruit," she said sternly, staring down at me, "I order you to release me."
"We're both way over the line today," I said, summoning a confident air that I didn't feel.
"I'm sorry,"
she said quietly, her voice calm and professional again.
"I've overstepped the bounds of civilized behavior, but I am your superior officer, and—"
I wiggled the needle and she shut up.
"I'm sorry, sir," I told her,
"but I can't let you kill me right now. If you'll kindly undo my straps without attempting to withdraw from the needle, I'll be on my way."
"What about your injuries?"
"I'll fix them myself." Thompson made a mistake then. Her hand had been drifting down toward her belt. She had a comm link there. At the last second she moved fast, reaching for the button, fumbling blindly with it. I jabbed the needle into her neck and the syringe began to pump automatically. The little bulb at the end pulsated. It was like watching a bee's poison sac contract when it's rammed home in your flesh. I grimaced sympathetically as she made a strangled sound. I hadn't wanted to hurt her, but she might have been going for a weapon. I'd killed her on reflex. Her hands flew up to her throat and her face purpled. I sat up, sawing at more straps with my small knife. I talked to her as she died.
"Sorry about that," I told her.
"You shouldn't have made that sudden move. Try to look on the bright side. You're out of this hellhole. I'm sure they'll revive you on Corvus. Good luck." Centurion Thompson sank to her knees. She tried to talk, but couldn't. I figured I was happy about that. She probably wasn't trying to say anything I wanted to hear.
"Listen,"
I said as she lay on the floor, gasping for breath. Her eyes were glazing over. "If you keep quiet about this, I'll do the same. It will be an accident, nothing more. I'll stay away from your tech. I'll leave the bios alone. I hope you'll do the same for me." I don't know if she even heard the last of it. By the time I'd stopped talking, she was stone dead. Chapter 28. I took a few minutes to barricade the door with a chair tilted under the door handle. It wasn't much, but I knew she'd told the orderlies to leave us alone. Hopefully, this would give me the time I needed. Scrambling and dropping things on the floor, I found a pack of syringes labeled with something that ended in mycin. That had to be an antibiotic, so I shot myself with two of them right into my shoulder. The injections burned and my flesh crawled. I hoped I hadn't just poisoned myself somehow. Then I removed the skin printer from the wall. Really, it was just a wand with a wide nozzle. I ran it over my injured flesh. The bullets inside would have to wait. If it was at least clean and sealed, that would do for now. I'd bother a field medic in my own unit about it later on, if I lived long enough to get fancy. The dead woman on the floor did nothing to keep my mind on the task at hand. It was strange, standing there, sweating and nervous, while trying to heal myself with a flesh-spraying device. Wet, pinkish material went everywhere, looking like juices from a raw steak. I told myself I hadn't really killed her, at least not permanently. She was already queued up on Corvus, waiting for her turn to come out of an alien oven. I wondered if she'd blab about how she got there. I suspected she wouldn't. She'd held me illegally and tried to murder me. After about a minute with the wand, I decided I'd done what I could. My arm felt a lot better, but it didn't look much better. The flesh was growing in and around the damaged tissue, healing over what would have taken months to do naturally. When I pulled my suit over the mess, the new skin tore in places. I winced, even though it caused no pain. There were no nerve endings in there yet, just raw skin cells. I should have dressed it more carefully, but I didn't have the time or the training. Hoping for the best, I stripped to the waist, laid gauze over my shoulder, taped it as best I could, then suited up again. I removed the chair from under the door and walked out like I owned the place. This was going to be the hard part. I decided there was only one way to handle it, by brazenly heading for the exit at a steady walk. I didn't run, I didn't even rush. I just walked. As I passed through three longish corridors, I earned several looks and a few frowns. I ignored every duty nurse, orderly, and bio. They all seemed to have something to do. As far as they knew, I was just a grunt heading down to the lab for a test or looking for the bathroom. Once, I saw one of the orderlies who had brought me in. He gave me a glance, then did a double take, but someone tapped him on the shoulder, demanding his attention. Bios didn't like it when orderlies ignored them. Before he could investigate, I turned a corner and did my best to vanish. The only problem came when I reached the front door. We were in a bunker, after all, and there was security. Fortunately, the protocol seemed to involve the automated door checking people's IDs as they entered. I waited just inside until a group passed by on the way out, then fell into step behind them. The guards didn't give any of us a second glance. When I was outside, I took a deep breath. The night was dark and quiet. The air of Steel World was hot, as usual, but not oppressively so. I'd left my helmet behind, and as I walked to my bunker, I let the sweat dry off me. 20 minutes ago, I'd been certain I was going to take another trip through the revival machines. I dared to smile. The bio was going to wake up pissed off if she did remember all this. I wasn't sure which one of us had broken more regulations during our encounter, but I sincerely hoped I wouldn't need her help again. By the time I reached my own bunk and sank into it, I had a jug of water in my hand. I drained most of it, then poured more on my head. I sighed and stretched out. I half expected Carlos's face to come over the top of my bunk like a full moon. I could almost hear his big mouth smarting off at me. But then I realized he was dead. They all were dead. I was almost alone in my unit on Steel World. Most of my squadron had died over the last few hours and were now up on Corvus, if they hadn't been permed. I found a snap rifle and planned to fall asleep with it across my chest. I closed my eyes and tried to rest. I was tired and felt beaten down. I knew I shouldn't sleep right now.
but I had to get rest whenever I could. I woke a few hours later to a terrible grinding sound. I felt sure for several confused seconds that the orderlies had me again. I came up into a sitting position on my bunk, feeling feverish. My snap rifle was aimed into the dark with the safety flipped off. No one was there but a few fellow recruits. They groaned and rolled out of their beds to their feet. "What's going on?" I demanded.
"How the hell should I know?"
came an answer from a female voice in the dark. I recognized the voice. It was Kiwi. "Hey!" I called out. "I thought you died a while back." She got out of her bunk and came down the row to sit on mine. We regarded each other in the dark room, waiting for orders.
"It was close," she said. "But while you were chasing dinos in that tunnel, the bio people patched me up in their bunker. They can do more than just revive us if they want to."
"Yeah. I've just come from there. I'm sore, but functioning."
"Maybe the people who died are the lucky ones," she said. "But only because you risked everything to keep them from getting burned. That was cool, James."
I smiled. "Not everyone thinks so." I was about to tell her the story of the bio-centurion who decided I'd seen too much and needed recycling when the lights flipped on and the arrows on the floor lit up. They were red this time, emergency colors. We pulled on our gear quickly and rushed out together. There were plenty of spare helmets with so many people missing, so I took one and put it on. More people from our unit gathered, but there were no veterans or officers. Not knowing what was happening, we aimed our weapons at everyone else who joined us in the main hallways. "Have you heard anything over the unit channel?" I asked Kiwi.
"Nothing," she said. "But something's up. I bet someone got hit."
We followed our ant trail of arrows to the exits and stepped outside. I half expected to see an incoming bombardment or even an invasion force at the gates. But there was nothing there.
"Look at HQ!"
shouted Kiwi at my side. The command post was a puffcrete bunker they'd set up behind the terminal building. It was gone. Or at least half of it was. There was a small cloud of dust with a flickering orange light inside.
"Fire!" Kiwi said. "It's on fire!"
"It's more than on fire," I said. "It's been taken out. That's why we haven't gotten any orders."
"Can you get through to Harris or Leeson?"
I tried. All the troops coming out of the bunker did. Our tappers had locating units on them. The tappers worked, but they weren't telling us anything because we were disconnected from the network. More and more people were coming out of their barracks, and some were streaming down from the walls where guards had been posted. As a group, we decided to head toward the HQ to see if we could render assistance. There was a lot of confusion about what to do with our command post knocked out.
"That's a crater,"
a tech specialist said to me as we trotted closer. He was a small guy with small eyes and an angry red face. He'd come over from the non-com barracks following his own set of emergency arrows.
"That means the lizards must have used air power."
"I don't hear any planes," I said. "It's been quiet except for that single grinding sound followed by some kind of explosion."
"Well then, what did this?"
the tech asked me petulantly.
"I don't know,"
I said. "But someone purposefully knocked out the HQ. That means we have no networking or officers on duty." The tech was nodding.
"That explains the emergency arrows. The system only knows how to lead people to their gathering points when something really goes wrong."
When we reached the HQ, I was relieved to find Harris directing traffic and Leeson giving orders.
"About time you recruits showed up," Leeson said to us. "Form a perimeter. I have enough people looking for survivors already."
We spread out with Harris bullying us into good firing positions. There wasn't much cover, but we took what we could find and watched the night around us. The next event took everyone by surprise. I think it was more startling because we all saw it with our own eyes. The Blue Medical Center, the same building where I'd been abused just hours earlier, suddenly turned into a plume of dust. I saw dust shooting up into the air in a dark cloud. When it cleared, the medical bunker was gone.
"We need to get the men out there, sir," shouted Harris.
Leeson looked at him and nodded.
"I'm in contact with the surviving officers. We're evacuating every structure."
I stared at the missing building and thought for a moment. "I heard something, sir," I said. "A grinding sound right before it went down."
"Yeah, what the hell does that mean?"
I think they're tunneling under us, weakening the supports and sinking our bunkers." Leeson, Harris, and the red-faced tech guy all looked at me like I was crazy for a second, but then Leeson nodded.
"It does make sense. I've been wondering why they were taking so damn long to hit us after the initial bombardment. If anyone should know what drilling through the metallic soil on this planet sounds like, it would be you. Okay, I'm relaying that up the chain of command."
What happened next surprised us all again, although in retrospect, maybe it shouldn't have. The Saurians were playing this game their own way. As it turned out, they liked to tunnel. Like every world, the reptilian inhabitants of Cancri 9 only had so many credits to spend on imported alien tech. On Earth, we spent that cash on interstellar invasion ships, weaponry, and special devices like our revival machines. We put our galactic credits into tech that would help return more credits. Anything that helped us fight was an investment to us. The Saurians had done a similar economic calculus. If there was one thing they had the very best of, it was drilling equipment. Steel World was a mining planet, and to mine right through hard metals, you needed amazing drills. Plasma-burning drills were just such pieces of equipment. When the first rig surfaced, it looked like a plasma grenade on overload. It was blue and ran with sizzling force fields. Unlike standard military screens, the fields enveloping the drilling machines weren't set to repel incoming ordnance. The screens moved and churned like invisible blades of force that spun around the central machine like knives of energy. Steel, puffcrete, soldiers, and vehicles were sliced away to nothing when they touched those spinning fields. We all hunkered down and stared as the ground vomited up 1, 2, 3, 6 of them. They weren't terribly large, but the troops that rushed out of the back end when they stopped spinning looked big to me. Armored and carrying heavy weapons, Saurians charged out to fire on anyone in sight. We returned fire, but our weaponry wasn't penetrating their armor.
"Harris, gather all your light troops and attack!"
Leeson shouted. I looked at him like he was crazy. We all did.
"You heard the man," Harris said grimly. "Stay low. Flank them while staying under cover. Spray fire at them from the sides."
We deployed and did as we were ordered. Unsurprisingly, it was a slaughter. Every time they got a bead on one of us, we were splattered. Our chattering snap rifles raked them, but did no damage.
"With all due respect, veteran,"
I shouted when he hunkered down nearby,
"we can't get through to those troops. Why are we doing this?"
We were taking shelter behind a broken wall that was about 3 feet high. The top was black with soot and smoldering. Harris reloaded his gun methodically. I couldn't help but notice that he had kept his head down and only taken a few pot shots at the enemy now and again.
"We're here to engage and distract, McGill," he said. "That's the real purpose of light infantry in any serious fight. You should know that by now. Don't worry, the revival machine on Corvus is operating just fine."
"I understand we're cannon fodder, veteran. I just don't understand why we're throwing away troops."
He shook his head and chuckled.
"We aren't. Leeson is organizing the weaponeers. They're the only ones who can take out these Saurian heavies. We have to give them the time he needs to get them into position."
I thought of Sargon back in the tunnels. I wished I had him with me now. Even if I only had his plasma tube, it would be an improvement.
"I understand, veteran," I said.
I got up from my hiding spot and sighted on the nearest Saurian. The alien looked resplendent at night. Such fine armor. He had a full body shell with a sheen of powered force shielding over it. In the dim light, the surface of his fields reflected like rippling water. I heard my gun chatter and saw sparks light up his shield with a score of hits. Staggered a step, he turned and swept his weapon toward me. It looked like a fire hose of gushing orange light. I stumbled and went down. I thought I'd lost a leg, but then I looked and saw Harris had his hand on my ankle. He'd pulled me down at the last moment.
"You're eager to die, aren't you?"
he asked.
"Only if it's for a good cause,"
I replied. He snorted and slammed my bad shoulder. I winced and gritted my teeth. I worked hard to give him a smile. We both heard heavy movement then.
The pile of broken rubble we were hiding behind was no longer lighting up with plasma. Harris and I looked at one another with wide eyes. We both knew the Saurian was marching over here in his heavy suit to finish us off. Like two trapped rodents, our heads swiveled looking for an escape route.
"He's on to us, veteran," I said.
"No shit."
"Have you got a grenade?"
He nodded and pulled it off his belt, staring at it.
"After this, I'm out. They don't issue a lot of these beauties."
It was a strange situation. We both knew there was nowhere to run. The second we stepped out of cover, the alien soldier would burn us down. But we weren't panicking, not really. When you know death will be quick and temporary, it's more of a feeling of personal defeat and honor than it is a matter of terror and desperation. At the same time, I found I still didn't want to die. Harris lifted the grenade and put his finger on the timer. I saw him reduce it to zero. My eyes widened.
"Going to wait until he's right on top of us?"
He nodded.
"You and I are going to hell together tonight, McGill."
The impossibly heavy tread grew louder and closer. I felt my guts tighten and churn. My throat burned as my stomach tossed acid up into it. Despite my intellectual certainty that I would live again, my body was beginning to get worried. I guess you can't erase a million years of instinct with a few months' training. Harris got up into a squatting position with one hand on the grenade. His thumb was hovering, and the shell of the device was already leaking power. In order to build enough of a charge for an instantaneous reaction, I knew the grenade had to cycle up before you triggered the ignition.
"Want me to stand and distract?"
"Go for it, recruit."
I waited until the last possible second. I stood up, and there was a shout in my helmet from other nearby troops. Then a blinding flash went off in my face. My only thought was one of regret. I hadn't even gotten to shoot the dino in defiance. For some reason, I had enough time for a follow-up thought. Why am I not dead yet? I was standing there, blinded, but I could still feel my rifle, so I pulled the trigger and held on to it. I fired at where the Saurian had been, where he had to be. Something kicked my calves. There it was. I'd finally been hit, I figured. I probably had no legs by now. I went down, and a hand shook me. I was shouting hoarsely.
"McGill, shut up, you idiot! He's gone!"
I stopped struggling. I could feel my breath hitting my faceplate inside my helmet and bouncing back, warming my face with steamy puffs.
"What?"
I asked.
"Who's gone?"
"The Saurian. The weaponeers blew him away. Pull yourself together, man."
I tried, I really did, but it took a few minutes. My vision slowly returned during this time, and I figured out what had happened. When the Saurian had walked up to us, preparing to burn us down to slag, the weaponeers Leeson had been organizing had burned him instead. The blinding flash hadn't been his weapon burning me. It had been their heavy tubes hitting his force field. The resulting energies that had been released had caused a blinding flash of radiance. When I could think and see again, with purple and green splotches occluding much of my vision, I saw Harris. He was leaning up against the slag heap, toying with his last plasma grenade. As I watched, he thumbed the timer back up to 5 seconds again and put it back onto his belt. Chapter 29. The latest phase of the battle was soon over. They'd hit us hard and hurt us, but they hadn't taken us out. The Saurians had sent up 6 drilling machines, each loaded with a team of heavily armed lizards. Altogether, they must have killed hundreds of us, but our weaponeers had killed all of them. I was in a ruined bunker with Leeson, Harris, and a dozen other fighters. None of us had eaten or bathed today. Our survivors were scattered around the compound in small groups, waiting for the Saurians to start a new attack.
"I'd expected a big, organized battle," I told Harris. "This is anything but. Why don't they hit us with everything they have and finish this one way or another? They have the numbers."
Harris chuckled and shrugged. It was Leeson who answered me.
"I wish they would just charge in here and finish this too, recruit," he said. "But they won't play it that way. They're trying to win everything right here, and it's making things all the more painful for us."
"Sir?" I asked, confused.
Win what?
The planet, the contract, the whole thing. This is it. That's what the brass up on the ship suspects, and I'm pretty sure they're right.
I shook my head, still confused. I looked around at the devastation. Around us, the spaceport was in shambles. There were no more lifters coming and going. There were no more troops in sight other than our reduced forces. A lot of dark holes yawned in the puffcrete walls. Leeson looked at Harris warily.
Should I bother to explain it to him?
Suit yourself, sir, he said.
He had his helmet off and had made a hat out of his smart cloth shirt. He tipped his makeshift hat over his eyes and made himself comfortable on a pile of rubble.
You see, troops,
Leeson said, addressing others who were listening in.
Legion Varus cheats. All of Earth's legions do. How do you think we've won so many battles? Our weapons are good, our tactics are superb. But really, it comes down to not taking permanent losses. Our troops return to the fight, sometimes before the battle is over. That's how we win so often. Tech at the level of our revival units is rare in our quadrant of the galaxy. As far as I know, only the Galactics and Earth forces have it.
Are the revival machines that expensive? I asked.
Yes, insanely expensive, but it's more than that. Every world in the Empire only gets so many credits to spend from their trading. Each government must choose very wisely what to purchase with them. Spending on frivolities is an easy way to doom your race to low status in the Empire. So most of the credits are reinvested. We bought this tech, revival machines, because it made our method of gaining credits more secure. Our soldiers come back to life when they die, surviving to become superior fighters. We might lose battle after battle, but we always win the war in the end. We never run out of troops, and that makes us the best.
I wasn't sure I got the message. I looked around at the rest of the recruits, and they looked as baffled as I was. Keevy was among them. She raised her eyebrows at me, questioningly. I shook my head in return. I didn't really get it either.
It's about body count, that's all, Harris chimed in. That's what the adjunct is getting at. That's all the Galactics understand, anyway. They're accountants at heart. If your troops are still standing when the dust settles, and you took fewer losses, you won.
Carry on, Harris, Leeson said. I'm going to check on our firing positions. He got to his feet and left. Are you saying the Galactics are watching us and scoring this battle? I asked Harris.
Exactly, Harris said.
Are they trying to see how many each side can kill?
Right.
I thought about that. Without revival units, we couldn't win in the end. The Saurians outnumbered us, and they would just keep coming. So this is to the last man, sir? I asked. Harris finally removed his hat and looked at me with bloodshot eyes.
You finally got it, kid.
But how can anyone tell if the Galactics are watching right now? Isn't that just guesswork? Unless you run into one the way I did? They've been watching several battles from what I could see.
He nodded slowly. Normally that would be true. But things aren't going normally. First off, you, and I do mean you here, McGill, have killed a Galactic. Twice.
I shifted on my haunches uncomfortably. I didn't know what it was.
You'd think they care about that.
But how does that change the situation? He shook his head at me as if I was being slow. Maybe I was.
The Galactics have it in for us. They have since the beginning. I tell you, the fix is in. They're scoring this fight. The one where we don't have the revival machines. So this time we can't make one troop come back to life over and over. We can't make it look like he never died. We'll have to confess our real losses.
I thought about that. Body count. You're telling me we really do cheat to keep our position? We get contracts because it looks like we always win,
Because our troops are still alive when it's over?
Yeah, that's about right. It's not that way on every world. But this is a tough one, with a tough local competitor. They've studied our methods for years. All those crazy contracts asking us to protect every snot-nosed air and mining complex. The Saurians have rigged this game. We fell into it face first, too. We even pissed off the judges, the Galactics, the Nerbs, everyone. Now, when this mess is over, the Nerb accountants will come out here and count bodies living and dead. We won't be around to hide the evidence. The results will be clear. The Saurians will have won with fewer losses.
But what about tech and firepower?
Asked Kivi suddenly.
Why doesn't the Tribune send us his heavies to relieve us?
He might, but I bet he won't, answered Harris. He's doing the calculus, too. He knows that the level of armament counts. The number we start with counts against us as well. He could have sent the heavy units right away, but didn't. If he relieved us now, that would make the battle bigger and erase any claim we could make that we were outgunned. I'm sure he's playing it the best he can from his point of view. But no matter what, I think we're screwed.
I thought about the revival units in a new light after that conversation. They weren't just insurance policies for the unfortunate few. Our commanders thought of them as vital equipment. Our legions never ran out of troops. It was like having magic magazines that never ran out of ammo. A huge advantage. This was especially true when it came to scoring who won battles and who was the most effective fighter. In order to stay on top, we had to prove we were the best, over and over. This time, however, we were going to lose. The next attack came in daylight when the sun was at its worst. The two hot suns of Cancri were fully revealed overhead, with no cloud cover to provide merciful relief. Inside our suits, air conditioners whispered and whirred with fans that struggled to keep up. In the early afternoon, I was dozing underground in a crater covered with slabs of leaning puffcrete. Harris came by, tapped my helmet, and I jumped awake. He gestured with a thumb, jabbing upward. I knew what that meant. It was my turn to do a 20-minute shift on the surface, watching for the enemy. Like a gopher poking his head out of a hole, I warily crept up to the top of the rubble heap we inhabited and looked around my position in a slow circle. Seeing nothing other than a few other gophers posted here and there around the compound, I got out my snap rifle and gazed through the scope, increasing my range of vision. The scope automatically adjusted for the glaring light of the suns overhead, but still, it wasn't enough to make the light pouring through into my eye socket completely comfortable. Squinting, I did my best to scan the area farther out, looking through the gaps in our walls and the mounds of metal shavings piled up around the entry holes their drillers had used the last time. Some of the guys in my unit were grumbling that only the recruits had to play gopher and do surface duty. I didn't feel that way. Sure, we were at greater risk and felt more discomfort, but the others, the weaponeers, officers, and our last few techs and bios, they needed to be protected. They were not as expendable as we were. In a siege, everyone was decidedly unequal. I didn't like guard duty, especially around the 15-minute mark when my air conditioner began to hiccup and the air in my helmet turned warm. But I understood that I wasn't here to have a good time. If the enemy decided to hit us with their heavy troops again, only the weaponeers with their thick black tubes could kill them. Only the bios could repair the wounded, perhaps keeping our body count low. And the techs, well, they kept our suits, communication systems, and other critical equipment functioning. Even now, they were underneath my position in the tunnels, connecting our bunkers underground so we could move between them without exposing ourselves. If the walls were penetrated by the enemy again, we now had vital cool spots for soldiers to rest and recuperate. Who was I? Only a guy with a rifle. A lightly trained, lightly armed recruit who was on his first campaign. I could hardly demand nor expect special treatment. So I sat sweating and trying to adjust the cooling tubes in the fabric of my suit every minute or two. It was an impossible task, of course. Spots on the upper surfaces of my arms and helmet grew burning hot frequently. I tried to crouch in the shade of an overhang, but there was only partial cover. Overly exposed to the radiation of Cancri, it was all I could do to sweat, mutter curses, and constantly check my tapper to see if my stint was up yet. When they finally hit us, I didn't believe it at first, thinking that the shadows I saw moving through holes punched in the walls of the compound must be something else, anything other than what I knew they had to be. Then, the first jugger dipped its massive head into the hole and dripped saliva on the rubble. I froze for a fraction of a second. This was real, I told myself. I was facing a monster, and its spittle was steaming to vapor the instant it touched the hot stones. They told us the monsters wouldn't come until evening. It was too hot out, even for them. They were native to this world, but in the warm season, even the native animals kept to the cool green forests and the shade of their stark buildings. Most of the planet's wildlife was nocturnal for very good reasons. But none of those assurances applied today. I was so hot I wasn't even sure I wasn't hallucinating. But I wasn't going to sit on my can anyway. I swung my snap rifle up, sighted on the left eye, and hammered out a burst of 10 pellets. With one eye destroyed, the jugger reared up, roaring. Its great head struck the top of the hole it had leaned through, but a moment later it managed to pull back and disappeared. I opened a comm channel and tried to report the sighting, but it was unnecessary and nearly impossible. Everyone was chattering, giving orders, asking for confirmation. They'd all heard the firing and the roar. They knew it was time to scramble into our defensive positions. Harris came up behind me, looming close. His body blocked out the yellow sun. The red one was behind a building, and for that I was grateful. I stayed with my rifle sighted on the hole, but so far the jugger hadn't reappeared.
Was that you firing, McGill?
Yes, veteran.
Did you hit it?
Took out an eye.
Well done. Did you know your AC is dead, kid?
I looked up at him for a moment. I had to admit I did feel even hotter than I had a minute ago. I thought I was just getting overexcited, I said. He huffed at me.
Get below before you fry, you moron. I need every troop I have, even you. Take it to the techs and have a bio check you for heat stroke.
But they're about to hit us.
Yeah, he said. I know. Hurry.
I slithered from my position downward. Harris assumed my spot and I could hear him muttering curses about exposure and heat. That brought half a smile to my face. I rather liked hearing him suffer up there on the hot seat. I was staggering when I reached the central tunnels. A tech grabbed my arm and began working my tapper before I could speak.
Exhausted fuel cell, she said. Your generator isn't recharging your cells.
Can I get a new generator, please?
No, she said. They're on reserve for emergencies.
I nodded, but I was thinking that as far as I was concerned, AC failure in 150 degrees was an emergency. But what did I know? I wasn't a tech. Before I could say much else, she opened my back panel and rammed two new cells into place.
Without a generator, you'll have to switch these out every 2 hours, less if you go out onto the surface.
I mumbled a thank you and went in search of water. Harris had said something about bios, but right now, I needed a drink. The bios might be territorial about their equipment and a little nuts when it came to protecting secrets, but when they saw me weaving and wandering down the tunnel toward their station, they rushed out to help. Mattis reached me first. He was tall and thin, with dark, serious eyes surrounded by deep worry lines. He looked me over quickly and professionally. I'd first met Specialist Mattis when the Raptors had stolen the revival machine. He'd been one of the lucky people who'd escaped slaughter in that underground vault.
"Where you hit, recruit?" he asked.
"What?"
"I don't see any punctures," said an orderly, talking over my head as if I wasn't there. "But he seems disoriented."
"I really need a drink," I said.
"Get that helmet off him,"
Mattis ordered. Both the techs and the bios I'd found were extremely effective when it came to spotting trouble that they could fix. I didn't struggle. I let them do their work. I sank down on the floor of the tunnel. Hands gripped my helmet and opened it. Cool air washed in a moment later. I sighed in relief. I hadn't realized that it was cooler in the tunnel than it was inside my suit.
"That's better," I said.
Biospecialist Mattis was crouching over me, looking into my eyes, tapping on my tapper. He looked concerned. I marveled at how specialists thought nothing of taking over when they had you in their grasp.
"Your blood levels are off," he said. "I'm seeing toxins that shouldn't be here. Have you been poisoned?"
"I don't think so. My suit AC shut down and I had my cells replaced.
Is there a leak? Turn him over."
I felt hands grab me and flip me over. I felt like a kid, and I resisted slightly, then let them do it. I wasn't too trusting of bios lately, but these people seemed to be trying to help.
"No rupture in the cells," Mattis said.
I finally opened my eyes and stared into his. He was frowning suspiciously.
"You're not telling me something, recruit," he said.
At first I was baffled, but then I thought I understood what he must be reading in my blood tests, which my suit monitored constantly.
"I had a bad grow a while back," I said.
"A bad grow?"
he asked, looking surprised. "Are you saying they didn't recycle? Why not?"
I shrugged.
"I'm not a bio."
Feigning ignorance as a recruit was usually effective, but not this time. He stared at me, his expression changing into a frown. He pulled back, taking his hands off me as if I was some kind of plague victim, or maybe a rabid dog.
"Orderly, get this man some water."
"I already did. It's in his hand, and he's drinking it." Mattis gave him an acid glance. The orderly wasn't dumb, because he nodded and stood up.
"I'll go look for some in the back of the station," he said.
The orderly vanished. Specialist Mattis watched him leave, then turned back to me. He leaned close, then froze. We both heard a metallic click. It was the sound of my snap rifle. I'd pulled the bolt back and planted the muzzle against his chest. The bio glanced down at it, then met my eye.
"So, it's you," he said. "Recruit McGill is the fugitive. They didn't give us the name. They say you're crazy, soldier. Did you know that?"
"Why, exactly?"
He looked a little confused by that one.
"Because you murdered Centurion Thompson, and you're holding on to a bad grow."
"Murdered?"
I asked, smiling faintly.
"How can you murder someone if they're already back to life? Isn't she up on Corvus, complaining about me?"
"No. She doesn't remember what happened, but she may in time. There were two orderlies who reported you. They found her body. They said you were crazy and a bad grow, that you had to be recycled."
Recycled.
Every time I heard that word, I found I liked it even less.
"Recycling me would be murder," I said. "That's just the kind of excuse they need to have me accidentally permed."
"What do you mean?"
"I've pissed off my Primus and Centurion Thompson."
"I think you need to let us do what we must. Don't you want a new body that operates properly?"
"This one has done pretty well," I said. But in truth, I was feeling sick. I wasn't sure if that was due to heat stroke or a bad grow, but I knew it was true. I decided it didn't matter. I couldn't take the risk of being permed by some overzealous bio on Corvus who had an accident with my data.
"Are you going to shoot me, or let me work on you?"
the bio asked. He stared at me as if he didn't care which it was. Maybe he really didn't care. If I shot him, at least he'd be out of this hellhole. I knew that a few guys had quietly offed themselves already. They figured a regrow back on Corvus was better than waiting here to be eaten by angry lizards. The officers would lean on them for that, of course. It was bad for morale. I lowered my rifle. I took a deep breath and another swallow of water. The bio, for all his bravado, looked relieved. He sat down next to me.
"You said you don't think they'll revive you on Corvus if you die down here? What's so bad they'd perm you?"
I looked at him, wondering which crime I should confess. Shooting Galactics? Messing with revival units? Which was worse? After a moment of thinking, I decided to confess to more recent crimes. They made more sense, and I knew that not every bio agreed the secrets were worth the violation of their oath to heal the injured. I was ordered to retrieve the data storage of a stolen revival unit. I did so. Without it, many troops would have been permed. That list could have included you, I might add, if you'd stayed in that chamber and been slaughtered with the others. Mattis frowned. I could tell he didn't like what I was telling him. After a moment, he motioned for me to keep talking. I did as I was ordered, I said, leaving out the part about volunteering for the job. When I got back and delivered the unit, Thompson was upset. I'd partially dismantled the unit, and she thought I'd seen too much of her specialized tech, I guess. She tried to take me out. I resisted. Successfully. He nodded slowly. Thompson has always been a little on the overzealous side, he said. All of the people who operate the revival units are like that. Those machines, they're more valuable than everything else this Legion has combined. Did you know that? Yeah, I said. I'm sure that we're all expendable in comparison. We should all be permed as far as Thompson is concerned. It's not that. I'm sure she was upset that the unit was lost and not retrieved intact. You were involved as a guard, right? That would make you partially at fault. I nodded, seeing the logic in that. Thompson had wanted to kill me. Maybe she'd been blaming me for the loss of our greatest piece of tech. Mattis worked at his tapper thoughtfully. I think I can help. She doesn't remember anything about what happened. Maybe the next time you meet, you can make a better impression on her. I thought about that. With water in my hand and cool air blowing in my face, I found I was able to get my mind working again. Whatever had come over me seemed to be fading. Okay. I'll try, I said. What about the orderlies that are accusing me of murder? He got up and touched my shoulder. Just let me talk to them. I have a good relationship. Better than most. They see lots of strange things on the job. They know when to clam up for the good of the team. He left me then, and I wished him luck in my head. I thought about what he'd said. Yes, I could imagine the orderlies saw lots of strange things in Legion Varus. I got up, swayed for a moment, then picked up my helmet and snap rifle. I began slowly walking up to the surface. I could hear the distinctive sounds of battle now. I had to get back to my unit. I had high hopes that Specialist Mattis would convince the orderlies to drop the whole thing, but I had the feeling that wasn't going to fix all my problems. I'd burned too many bridges with too many people, and many of them, it seemed, were out to burn me in return. Chapter 30 Once the juggers started coming, it seemed they would never stop. They came in waves of about 40 beasts each time. I wasn't up top for the first wave, which was easily repelled, but by the second wave they seemed to be getting smarter. They came in every opening in the walls at once, not just randomly, without coordination. It took a lot of firepower to take even a single jugger down. By concentrating from our entrenched positions, we were able to do it easily when they came through one at a time. By the third wave, they were charging in every breach at the same time, running full speed. The first one or two monsters went down in a hail of fire, but the next ones scrambled over the dead and rushed forward. The piling bodies even seemed to help them, providing more cover for the next group. I was there for the third wave, the one that reached our lines. It was strange to watch our positions being overrun. They were right on top of us, blotting out the twin suns for a moment of lavender shade. Up close, my snap rifle wasn't much good. I could put out an eye or hammer away until I destroyed a monster's gullet so thoroughly it couldn't breathe and died from catastrophic blood loss, but really, it was the weaponeers that did most of the killing. A weaponeer named Lund was nearby, protected by a fire team of five recruits, including Keevy and me. We were there to distract as much as anything else. When the juggers overran us, dipping down their massive jaws to snatch up and chew, I tried to get a big golden-scaled monster's attention.
but failed. Keevy hammered rounds into the thing's face, tearing apart a huge flaring nostril that